This podcast contains explicit content and is not suitable for all ages. Listener discretion is advised.
Welcome back to Always the Last to Know. I'm Ash.
I'm Katie.
Howdy doody, everybody. I'm so sorry. I didn't know how to start it this time.
Howdy doody.
You know Howdy what? Doody.
That's how we're starting it. There it is.
Yep.
Done.
We can attribute that to the quarter of this giant glass of wine that my husband gave me before starting.
Truly, it's massive. It's a massive glass of fucking wine, dude. It's insane.
Cheers.
Right? Yeah, so I have the tiniest bit of alcohol, which I never do. This truly might be like maybe the third or fourth time I'm drinking in this entire year of my life.
Wow.
Like from 30 to 31. Yeah, I really did not. I don't drink a lot of alcohol. It's not my favorite.
I mean, I get it. The hangover sucks. It makes me feel bloated.
Yeah, it just makes me feel like shit. But for today, I really needed it. And we'll get into that in a little bit.
We'll tell you why alcohol is necessary for this episode.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Good. Really quick, I want to shout out a listener who's been on our Instagram just being so awesome. James.
Interacting
hello.
With us.
What's up? Thank you so much for listening and interacting with our Instagram. Seriously, just hello. Thank you. So exciting.
It really is. It makes us so excited when people interact because we're like, oh shit, people actually like listening to us and interacting with us and we feel special.
And it like helps guide us to know like, hey, this you are doing a good job on this episode. And if we're not doing a good job, please let us know. Like, feedback is so helpful. So I just want to shout you out. What's up? Thank you so much.
Thank you, James. And like, I love having a dialogue between people. And James, let us know where you're listening from the next time you comment on something. Okay.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. Oh, what else too? Oh, so we're like obsessed with looking at our analytics. Honestly, it's fun to look at. And my favorite part is the map of where everyone is listening from. Like, that's just so fun. But we noticed that since last week's episode came out, our listens in Australia went from 8 to 18. And I don't know if this is one of my friends over there listening or if this is just organic random strangers listening to this. But like, hi, Australia.
Hello, Australia. You. Yes.
Thank you for tuning in.
Oh, and Burlington, Vermont. Is up there too. If you're in Burlington, hello, please say hi. Come on to our Instagram, say hello. I promise we're nice.
We see you. Isn't that our top city?
Or that is our top city. Yeah.
That's exciting. I fucking love Vermont.
Right? Me too.
That's that.
I mean, truly, like, I've had nothing going on this week. It's really, I've been doing the research for this topic and work. So I'm ready to just get into this because I have a lot of information for you all.
Right before we start, I do want to mention that something exciting is happening. Your birthday is on the 30th.
Oh, yeah. Ooh, so when you're listening to this, yesterday was my birthday.
And I am driving out to Pennsylvania to
hell
see
fucking
you.
Yeah,
we're gonna go to a fucking fairy festival. I'm excited.
Yeah, I'm
fairy
super
festivals,
fucking pumped.
Farmers markets. Fun.
Yeah, it's gonna be absolutely amazing. I'm really excited. I'm so fucking excited.
And then
the second part of this is probably gonna be filmed, recorded together for the first time.
And then maybe we can actually film ourselves doing it because we won't be lagging.
Seriously. Oh, my God. The technical difficulties of this. If you know anything about how to video record while you're on Zoom and not have it lag, please, our DMs are open.
Yeah. Let us know.
hit us up because we're having some difficulties here, please.
We want to be able to give you guys like really good quality visuals on social media and everything, so please help us.
Yes, we are trying. Like, if you like something that we post, let us know. If you hate it, I'm cool with that. Let us know too.
That's fine.
We want to make contact. I mean, yeah, we want to make contact with you, but we want to make content that you are enjoying. So, like, let us know. Please. Talk to us. We are lonely.
Anyways, I feel like this is a good jumping off point to get into the episode.
Ugh, I know. I have so much anxious energy. All right, let's get into it.
Okay.
Okay. Hopefully the topic explains a little bit of my anxious energy. Today, tonight, right now, we are going to be getting into MK Ultra. And oh my god. Hopefully we put a trigger warning at the beginning of the episode. If we didn't, here's the trigger warning right now. Human testing, torture, drug use, Nazis, the Holocaust. It's a lot. It's just a lot. I was trying to think if there's anything else, but general trigger warning for violence. I feel like
you covered most of it. Yeah.
Yeah, I think so. So this is going to be multiple parts. Originally, I thought it was going to be two. It's probably definitely going to be three.
There's a lot of information.
There's a lot.
I have my listening ears on. I am ready.
God, it's so much. And before we can really get into the depths of MKUltra, which was, for those who don't know, the name for the CIA's project that included hundreds of clandestine experiments, which I want to note, because, you know, words are really important, that, like, the technical definition of clandestine is secret, but it does have an implication of illegal or illicit activity. The goal of MKUltra and its sub-projects was to master mind control and other aspects of psychological warfare. It ran officially from 1953 to 1973, and it took place all over the world, both in the U.S. and overseas. I need to sip my drink.
It's a lot.
It's a lot. It's so much. So yeah, MKUltra is like the umbrella in which these sub-projects and the quest for mind control was. The main source that I used outside from the straight-up transcripts of the joint hearing before the Select Committee on Intelligence and the Subcommittee on Health and Scientific Research, I read this book called Poisoner-in-Chief by a brilliant journalist named Stephen Kinzer. And the book came out in 2019. I'm
super excited to get into this book and, like, to hear all that you've learned, because you have been, like, texting me about it all week. And I'm just like, I'm pumped.
I've been so deep into this book. I also have the audiobook of it, because the way that my brain works, it helps for me to listen and read it at the same time. And it's just neurodivergency. This book talks about everything that we pretty much know about MKUltra to this day. And a lot of it sounds unbelievable and horrible and atrocious, because it is. But, like, I assure you, these are 100% facts that Kinzer is presenting. And he's not just some, like, crazy dude. He's a phenomenal journalist, an author of a bunch of books. He worked as a professor for multiple respected colleges, like Boston University and Northwestern. He has, like, a phenomenal background. So I just wanted to put that out there before we get into this. Because there are a lot of sources out there and books out there which can appear legitimate, but are not. So even if something, like, is in a book, listeners, it is still important to vet the authors and vet all of your sources.
And that's on facts.
Facts are so important, guys. So important. So the main person to keep in mind when it comes to MKUltra is a man scientist named Sidney Gottlieb, which Kinzer's book follows as he is the mad scientist behind MKUltra. But there's a lot of background information that we need to get into before he comes into the experiments. And there's also a few, like, pre-game, I guess, to MKUltra projects that we need to talk about and kind of understand a little bit before we get into full MKUltra. So we'll talk about these predecessors, and the next parts will be about the depths of specifically MKUltra. Drink every time I say MKUltra. So please don't. You'll get, like, blackout drunk already. Please don't.
I'm going to run out of wine.
Seriously. So the first things that we need to talk about are a place called Camp Dietrich, a CIA project known as Project Paperclip, and the Cold War.
Oh, shit.
Dude, Project Paperclip is so fucked up, and truly at some point will be its own episode. For sure. Absolutely. Okay. Okay, guys. Okay.
Oh, shit.
I also, like, texted Ash earlier that today is just, like, a manic high energy day where I just kind of have, like, a lot of really chaotic energy for some reason. I feel like I'm, like, talking really quickly, which does not add to the credibility of talking about something that sounds like a conspiracy. But again, this is all fact, and it is proven, and we know all of this happened. I also just want to say now, no one got in trouble for any of this.
Why am I not at all surprised by that information?
Just want to throw that out there. Yeah. Yeah, no one got in trouble for this. So, let's talk about Camp Dietrich. In 1941, intelligence reports came in about Japan rampaging through China using germs as weapons. They were engaging in biological warfare in the world war that was happening at the time. Reports also show that these weapons were being tested by Nazis on humans locked in concentration camps.
Oh, shit.
Literally, right off the bat, this starts off, like, really rough. Obviously, this is horrible. When the army saw that report, they didn't simply see the tragic events that were happening. They saw war tactics that were way ahead of ours.
Yeah.
So President FDR responded by creating this group called the War Research Service, which was, essentially, the first agency dedicated to studying biological warfare in America.
Okay.
And it was given this super boring name, War Research Service, purposely to try and hide, like, what they were up.
Yeah.
After, like, later, some reports came out that Hitler wanted to use bioweapons to attack Britain. So they reached out to the U.S. for help. Later, these reports were proven false. But regardless, the request had been made, and this request led them to a man named Ira Baldwin. At this time, there's no CIA. We have this thing called the Office of Strategic Services, the OSS, which I get into a little bit later when we're talking about the Cold War. But those are, like, our spies. They're watching over everything, and they're seeing what other countries are doing, and they're like, you know what, we're gonna assemble a bunch of bacteriologists, because if other countries are using germs and shit, like, we need to talk to some germ people. So they asked all these scientists if it was possible to create a massive, safely sealed container that could hold a ton of deadly weapons, like, hold biological weapons.
Yikes.
Yikes. And everyone in there was like, no, you can't do that. It's not safe. It's not.
Maybe, like, no. Let's not. Thanks.
The way that I have it written down doesn't necessarily imply that they were like, no, that's not a cool thing to do. The way that I have it written down is that they were like, no, it can't be done.
Oh, okay. So it's not like they were protesting it happening. They're just like, yeah, I don't think this is actually possible.
Exactly. But the people who are asking have reports that biological warfare is happening in other countries. Yeah. So other countries have figured out how to do this. except Ira Baldwin. He was like, well, this is obviously a summary of this scientist. Well, I mean, if we can do it with test tubes, why can't we just make a bigger test tube? Which is a fair point.
I mean, yeah, it's a good question. It's a fair question. Just maximize
which
the
is
size.
Essentially, yeah, just like, you know, make a bigger, if you can do it with a small thing, you can do it with a big thing, basically, which, yeah, it, he's not wrong.
If I
so the government was stoked.
You can learn to do it.
Yes, exactly. So the government obviously was stoked, wanted to hire this professor in Wisconsin. Who like went to his boss and was like, hey, I've been asked to serve our country and help them fight the Nazis. And he was put on administrative leave and went on to launch and lead America's secret program to develop biological weapons.
Wow. What a job. What a job.
What a fucking job. And honestly, okay, so I know that this is going to seem like a really detailed account of all of this, but I am truly skimming the surface of some of the information that Kinzer has in his book. Mm. I cannot recommend everyone should read this book. Everyone should read this book. It is out of control. It is out of control.
Unhinged.
Unhinged, truly. And the level of research that Stephen Kinzer put in to write this book is amazing. He like genuinely may be a personal hero of mine. I just don't know enough about him yet to declare it.
Yeah.
Okay. So through this program, the secret program, they acquired a former national air base, an Air Force base that was known as Dietrich. And in 1943, it was renamed Camp Dietrich, and it became the headquarters of the Army's Biological Warfare Laboratories.
All right.
Ultimately, about 1,500 scientists worked there, and a majority of them were recruited by Ira Baldwin.
Damn. So, okay, that's a lot of scientists.
I have a little excerpt here that is like one of part of the contract that some of these scientists had to sign upon coming to work at Camp Dietrich, just to kind of like highlight the secrecy that surrounded this office.
Lay it on me.
In the event of my death, I authorize the commanding officer at Camp Dietrich, Maryland, to make arrangements for and conduct the processing of my remains and to place them in a sealed casket which shall not thereafter be opened. I authorize postmortem examination of my remains to be made exclusively by proper Army representatives in their discretion. Yeah.
Whoa.
Like, to death, you secrecy.
That's the definition of taking a secret to the grave.
Truly. Truly. And their goal was to develop weapons to use against the Nazis. And I can't imagine, and this book repeats it a lot, people being like, no, I'm not going to fight for our country against the fucking Nazis. Yeah, I'll do whatever you need. They were incredibly successful, and this at Camp Dietrich. So here's a quote from the book. They produced industrial quantities of anthrax spores, bred mosquitoes infected with yellow fever, and even developed a pigeon bomb, a bird whose feathers were impregnated with toxic spores. Baldwin also directed work at two field testing stations, one at Dugway Proving Grounds in Utah, and another on Horn Island off the coast of Mississippi. He did what the Army hired him to do, bring biological weapons into America's arsenal. Bred mosquitoes infected with yellow fever.
Yeah.
Anthrax spores. We're talking about our government.
Bro, like, the moment that you said anthrax, I was like, no. No. This can go so bad so quickly.
I'm on page 2 of my notes, and we're already talking about anthrax spores and pigeon bombs.
and yellow fever laced mosquitoes.
Mosquitoes infected, bred mosquitoes infected with yellow fever. We're talking about our fucking government. Do you know how unhinged I sound just saying this sentence?
The mosquito thing really fucking bothers me because of the fact that there was, like, a whole period of time where they would just come around spraying deep in fucking neighborhoods to get rid of the mosquitoes, and yet we're over here breeding them infected with yellow fucking fever as bio-warfare.
It makes you wonder why they were so intent on killing those mosquitoes.
Yeah.
On the East Coast, near Maryland.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, that's alleged. That's just a conspiracy theory of mine, personally.
That's just our minds tinkering around there.
Okay. Alcohol makes me say things. So, May 7th of 1945 is when the Nazi army surrendered. Ira Balvin returned to his job at the University of Wisconsin soon after, but the studies at Camp Dietrich continued.
Of course they did.
Of course.
Threat has been neutralized. So, must continue.
Well, here's the thing. So, the war is over, but now Nazi scientists and their Japanese allies and all of their knowledge were, quote, adrift. With many of them showing up in allies' custody. This is where something called Project Paperclip comes in.
Okay.
The Nazis did horrible fucking things. I don't need to say that, but it's just in my notes, just, you know, to move the story along.
Pretty sure most of us know that and believe that.
If you don't know and believe that, I don't know why you're listening to this podcast. I don't.
The fact that there's people out there who refuse to believe that it happened blows my mind.
I cannot even fucking get into Holocaust deniers. Yeah. With the shit that I'm about to talk about, I can't. So, while the Nazis did those horrible things, they studied and wrote down everything they did. And while that information was, like, some of it was destroyed, the mad scientists in charge of it held a lot of information. Gathered in ways that the laws in the U.S. prohibit the U.S. from taking in.
Yeah, like insane testing on people.
Yeah. So various people, the scientists at Camp Dietrich, found that information really valuable.
That's terrifying.
Not only for the sake of our projects, but for the sake of keeping that knowledge out of the hands of enemy countries, the Soviet Union.
That, but also, like, we're not good people. Like, the people running this fucking country, especially we're also bad.
We're also super bad, as we've seen in all of our history, and as we're about to fucking get into with Project Paperclip.
Oh my god.
And that's totally something that, like, this book I wish kind of focused on a little bit more, mm-hmm. in the sense that, like, all of these people justify what they're doing, like, for the sake of the country, and it's like, you realize that's what the Nazis said, right?
Yeah. I mean, if anything, I'd take for the sake of all humanity over for the sake of the country, but, like, we're doing bad things here, things that should not be happening at any level with anyone.
I'm sure people are like, did Katie just compare the U.S. government to Nazis? Yeah. Yes. And you're about to fucking see why.
Yes.
You're about to fucking see
why. The answer to that is most oftentimes 99.9% yes.
Yes.
And if you don't know that, I'm sorry, but wake up.
So the concept wasn't new to people working for the government, or the concept of the Nazis having valuable information and wanting to keep them out of the other hands' countries wasn't new to people working for the government or even to the president at the time himself. The first time the idea of allowing Nazis to have immunity for their knowledge and network of spies was proposed in 1944. This was, like, as Nazi spies began falling into the Office of Strategic Services hands. The director at the time asked Franklin Roosevelt, president, in reference to allowing Nazi spies to come over after the war. But Roosevelt was not fucking down. He was like, no, we are not granting the Nazis immunity. This would, first of all, look bad, but also be bad.
Yeah. He ain't wrong on that. Oh my God.
But then FDR died. And a little bit after that, Colonel Reinhard Gehlen surrendered to American forces in May of 1945 and quickly made a deal under which he turned his spy network over to the OSS in exchange for legal protection and a generous stipend, according to Kinzer. Not just a stipend, a generous stipend.
I'm like, this would... No, we should... He should be no, in custody. Yeah. He should be in custody. Absolutely. Should not be given money.
Oh, absolutely. So not only did he come into the U.S. and get protection, but that set a legal precedent that then allowed Nazi scientists into America.
Yeah.
Which caused the army to create something known as the Joint Intelligence Objectives Agency, whose main goal was to find Nazi scientists and get them into the U.S.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's about to get so much worse.
It's like, okay, let's go round them up and then give them protection and a stipend. What the fuck?
Yep. So here's another excerpt from the book. At the Kranzberg Castle Interrogation Center... Clerks began using paper clips to mark the files of prisoners whose backgrounds presented the most troublesome cases. From that practice came the code name of the clandestine project by which Nazi scientists were given falsified biographies and brought to work in the United States. Operation Paperclip. President Harry Truman set in motion on September 3rd, 1946. His secret order, drawn up by intelligence officers and approved by Undersecretary of State Dean Akinson, authorized the issuance of up to 1,000 visas for German and Australian scientists in the interest of national security.
I wish that everyone could see my face right now because what the fuck?
Absolutely what the fuck?
You know, we have scientists here.
Not scientists who have tested on humans.
That's true.
Allegedly.
Allegedly.
Allegedly, the scientists haven't tested on humans. Not that the Nazis allegedly.
Oh, no. Yeah, no. We know that about the Nazis.
Yeah. The important thing to note is that President Truman specifically said that he forbade cooperation with anyone who had been, quote, a member of the Nazi Party and more than a nominal participant in its activities or an active supporter of Nazi militarism. But literally, the operation continued as if it hadn't. Like, that's when they just started falsifying people's biographies. And it's crazy that it's something that we knew. People, like, these Nazis just came in to work for the U.S. and worked for the government, and the people that they worked with were aware, but just... it didn't fucking matter.
Question. Were they just... okay, there's so many things. Were they just living amongst us?
Yeah.
Okay, so they were not on, like, a base or anything.
No.
Okay.
They were just given new names.
Next question.
Mm-hmm.
I very much question the whole, like, not nominal, like, amount of whatever, Nazism, and how much you partook in that. They were doing testing on humans that were in concentration camps. I feel like all of them did too much and supported too much. You're not just doing that if you don't support it. Are you fucking kidding me? I don't understand.
I think,
like,
he's like kind of talking about... I think he's talking about the scientists who were, like, held at gunpoint and, like, hey, run this data for me. I think in theory, like, that's kind of who Truman was thinking that we were getting, or at least wanted it to look like on paper.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Because, like, yeah, why not, you know, save the scientists who were legitimately threatened into partaking? But that's not what they were doing at all.
Yeah.
At all. Because over 700 scientists, engineers, and technical specialists who worked for the Third Reich came to the U.S. to work for the government.
I can't imagine that all of those people were just held at gunpoint to do this stuff. Like, come on.
No.
Come on.
In fact, one of them was truly one of the worst. And one day we will do a Project Paperclip episode and come back to all of this. And it's through Project Paperclip that a super fucking evil man named Kurt Blohm almost makes his way to Camp Dietrich. And I say almost because he doesn't come to the U.S., but he does eventually start working with Camp Dietrich.
Okay.
So he was a high-ranking Nazi scientist before and during World War II. He was the Deputy Reich Health Leader and also part of the Nazi Biological Warfare Program.
Oh, fun.
So just like really quick, I need to get into some of the horrible shit that he did. And it's awful, but it does like need to be said. It
paints a fucking picture of who this person is.
He developed the aerosol delivery systems for nerve gas to be tested on inmates at Auschwitz. He bred infected mosquitoes and lice to be tested on inmates at two other concentration camps and produced the gas for use in killing 35,000 prisoners at camps in Poland where patients with tuberculosis were being held.
Jesus fucking Christ.
So prepare yourself for the next statement.
All around just a terrible fucking human being.
Yeah, like a Nazi who did all of that.
Wow.
Due to interference from the U.S., CIA, and Camp Dietrich, he was acquitted of all of his war crimes in the Nuremberg trials. Yeah. The book really goes into that, and I highly recommend. This is another... Read the book. Everyone should read this book. So while he didn't end up coming to Camp Dietrich, a few scientists went to him and they chatted for a little while and they got some interesting information and he comes into play.
Chatting with this piece of shit.
Yeah, imagine just like chit-chatting with this fucking Nazi. And the book like describes the way it's, yeah, no, it's so bad.
I don't think my brow could be more furrowed right now.
The next scientist that Camp Dietrich wanted to really get a hold of was a man named Shiro Ishii, a general who ran something known as Unit 731. So in August of 1945, Japan surrendered, and among several captured officers, there was something like kind of rumored amongst them known as Unit 731, which was, according to the rumors, a secret germ warfare program where human testing was being conducted. Through information gathered, between 1936 and 1942, Ishii received at least 3,000 to potentially 12,000, quote, bandits and other suspicious people in the countryside, captured Chinese soldiers and anti-Japanese partisans, common criminals and mental patients. Here is a quote from the book by Kinzer that talks about some of the things that he put people through. They were exposed to poison gas so that their lungs could later be removed and studied, slowly roasted by electricity to determine voltages needed to produce death, hung upside down to study the progress of natural choking, locked into high-pressure chambers until their eyes popped out, infected with anthrax, syphilis, the plague, cholera, other diseases, forcibly impregnated to provide infants for vivisection.
Oh, fuck no. Fuck no.
Which is just, like, testing on infants and, like, surgery and shit.
And the forced impregnation, like, that's... It's literally a crime against humanity.
Yeah. Bound to stakes to be... All of this is, yeah. Bound to stakes to be incinerated by soldiers and slowly frozen to observe the progress of hypothermia. God, there's so much more, but I truly can't keep reading this. Like, I can't keep reading this out loud to you guys. I'm so sorry. But yeah, there is so much more. Animal blood was injected literally just to see what would happen.
Into humans?
Into humans. Just to see what would happen. Just to fucking see what would happen. So after he was just like found living in his hometown and captured and stuff, he said to the U.S., if you give me, my superiors and subordinates documented immunity, I'll get all the information you want. I'd like to be hired by the U.S. government as a biological warfare expert.
Jesus.
And you fucking bet he was.
Of course. Of course he was.
Absolutely he fucking was. And he gave a ton of information. Data about how various toxins affect humans, how they can spread, what dosage level kills most effectively. And there was a quote where it literally said, scientists at Camp Dietrich were delighted. Delighted. I just needed a little bit of silence because it's insane. He handed over 15,000 slides of various human organs that all dealt with some sort of deadly incident.
I hate this man.
I hate him. Often victims were still conscious when their organs were removed because she believed that the best data could be collected at the point of death.
Are you?
Everyone take a sip of your drinks.
I need it.
Mm-hmm. This is why I'm drinking. So this is like kind of the madness that I've been lost in for the last few weeks. It's been a lot. It's been a lot.
Now I can really understand like the manic energy today and like coming into this. And
yeah, like knowing what we were going to be talking about today was a lot.
Yeah.
So yeah, Camp Dietrich is a bunch of scientists and government workers who don't give a shit about what anyone has done or is willing to do in the name of science for the greater ?
The audacity to even try to call it that.
Yeah. And something that like bothered me, but was pointed out in the book, mm-hmm. was that Ishii ran tests on literally fucking anyone he could get his hands on, which included American prisoners of war. And like Kinzer wanted to like pointed out that that was included, and Camp Dietrich like still didn't care.
What the fuck?
Which like everyone knows that men and government workers in the 1950s obviously believed then and probably still now that Americans are like more valuable than anyone else. So, like, you know, he felt it was important to mention that, like, Americans were also killed by this man and they still didn't care.
Wow.
But, like, that just, the framing of that really fucking annoyed me.
Yeah. Wow. This country, we're so full and it's, of ourselves.
Kinzer did not say it like that. I just want to say Kinzer didn't say it like that, but it was just sort of like the mentioning of American prisoners of war being involved. I was like, okay, but all of these other people aren't bad enough. We have to be like, and to make it worse, Americans were killed, you know?
Yeah, yeah. I get what you're saying.
Okay. So the last thing we need to talk about before we get into MKUltra is the Cold War. Again, this is just the background information needed. We have not even got into any of like the actual fucking tests that they've run for mind control. I want to remind everyone of that.
I just like at this point, and we're not even into that, like I truly don't know how you've been reading about this. Like
it has been so much, and there's been so many times where I've just wanted to text you and be like, hey, can we like talk about Nazis for a second? But I didn't want to do that because who what a cruel person.
at least you would ask first.
Oh, of course I would ask.
Do you have the mental space to talk about this right now?
Yeah, listeners, I hope you do. I just fucking looked and we're already at 38 minutes or something, and we have so much more to go. Okay.
Oh god,
I hope you guys have some cleaning to do. All right, the Cold War. So it's just after World War II. Soviet Russia and the U.S. had to work together to defeat the Axis powers of Nazi Germany, Japan, and Italy. Even though we had to fight on the same side as the Soviet Union, Soviet Russia, we had no trust for them and they had no trust for us. The Soviets were angry with the U.S. Because of how long it took for the U.S. to get involved in fighting the war, which resulted in the death of tens of millions of Russian soldiers. The U.S. saw Stalin as a tyrant and believed that communism, if spread too far, would take over democracy and, more importantly to them, capitalism. At this point in time, 1945, the President Truman felt as though we were in a time of peace and we didn't need a, quote, clandestine intelligence agency. So he abolished the current Office of Strategic Services. 2 years later, he changed his mind because he kind of realized we weren't really in a time of peace. We were in what we know now as the Cold War. Oops. So he signed the National Security Act. Dude, his bad and what he fucking did. He signed the National Security Act of 1947 and created the CIA. This act and its super ambiguous wording gave the CIA a crazy amount of power. So this is directly from the act.
I feel like they really just do whatever the fuck they want.
Truly. Oh my god, they really do. And this comes up in part two, but I'll just throw this fact in now since it came up naturally. For the first 8.5 years of the CIA's existence, they effectively had absolutely no supervision except sometimes maybe when it was important enough, the president. Maybe. But otherwise, it was like just the CIA doing whatever the fuck they wanted. And they could do that because they were given, quote, the authority to perform actions and duties related to intelligence affecting the national security as the president or the director of national intelligence may direct.
Oh!
So they were given the authority not even to only be operated by the president. Someone else could direct them. And who's the director of national intelligence? The leader of the CIA.
Jesus Christ.
And they were given the authority to, quote, collect intelligence through human sources and by other appropriate means.
Quote, what does end, that end mean? Quote. It's so, oh my god, it's so broad. What a broad fucking statement.
It's so broad. So because somehow that didn't give them enough power, they also, 2 years later, something called the Central Intelligence Act was passed in 1949.
Okay.
It permitted the Central Intelligence Agency to use confidential fiscal and administrative procedures and exempted it from any of the usual limitations on the use of federal funds. That's obviously a quote. Those are not my words. Just bear with me for one more second. Lots of legal jargon. The agency shall be exempted from the provisions of sections 1 and 2, chapter 795 of the Act of August 1935, and the provisions of any other laws which require publication or disclosure of the organization functions, names, official titles, salaries, or numbers of personnel implied the agency. They don't have to tell Congress anything about how they get their money or what they do with it.
They're like, don't even bother asking because we ain't got to tell you shit.
We're not going to fucking tell you anything. Yep.
This is, this, again, unhinged. Unhinged. That is my new favorite word, as Katie can tell you. Absolutely unhinged.
Yeah. So this is important to mention because throughout, and this wasn't stuff that I got from the book. This was actually something that, like, I had researched myself. Because I often am like, how did the CIA get away with this? And I made a little TikTok series about the history of the CIA. So I like that's I just like have this information myself from other research. But like the CIA just has the fucking right to do whatever they want.
You know, so we're okay. Deep- okay. Can I just really quick interject? I love that show Alias. And she's a CIA agent. And I mm-hmm. always thought to myself, my God, they really just do whatever the fuck they want in this show. And I really thought that it was
yeah.
unrealistic, but turns out.
It turns out they really just do whatever the fuck they want, especially in this time. I can't necessarily speak to the CIA right now.
Yeah.
But when right, it began, like, when it first started, especially they did whatever they want.
Oh my God.
So we're deep in the Cold War era. It's 1947 and the CIA is conducting its first covert operations.
Okay.
They're sending operatives into Europe and they hired a bunch of gangsters to break up a communist-led strike in Marseille.
Wow.
It's sending spies and saboteurs, commando squads, into the Soviet Union. I just want to remind you that some of the spies that we have are Nazi spies that we brought over. Just a reminder. Meanwhile, back in the U.S., and this is something that, like, a lot of people in America learn about in school, there were rumors all fucking over the place. This is when we get the quote-unquote Red Scare. Political propaganda to spread fear about the rise of the Soviet Union and communism. We're hearing rumors about prisoners of war returning and spreading communist teachings. And all of the rumors amongst, like, society are being further pushed by things that are happening in the U.S. government. The, quote, House Un-American Activities Committee had formed in, like, the late 30s. And their whole thing was finding communists who worked inside the federal government and other big areas like Hollywood. They kind of, like, died down, but then once the Cold War was, like, raging up, they, like, gained a lot of popularity again. Hollywood created blacklists that banned suspected radicals from employment. President Truman made an executive order, 9835, known as the Loyalty Order, and according to History.com, it mandated that all federal employees be analyzed to determine whether they were sufficiently loyal to the government. So, like, stuff was happening. Stuff was happening that was making people panic. I get why they were nervous about those things. Then, in 1949, a cardinal, Josef Manzetti, he's a cardinal in Hungary. He confessed to crimes of attempting to overthrow their government and a bunch of other stuff that he had, like, definitely not committed as a cardinal of the Catholic Church. Like, violent crimes that he, like, for sure did not commit.
So are we saying that somebody paid him to say these things?
He was, like, on TV looking, like, disheveled and beaten, and he was definitely, like, forced to kind of say these things.
Okay.
So rather than just being like, oh, he was clearly beat up and threatened into saying this, senior CIA officials took the cardinal's behavior and tone as proof that mind control techniques had been created and perfected.
No, he wasn't just beat the shit out of and forced into saying something. He was definitely mind controlled.
Definitely.
Now we need to worry about that. Now we need to start doing our own so we can fight back.
Whoa. Exactly.
Oh, am I right?
Like, literally exactly.
When shitty men in power are super fucking predictable.
Yeah. So the first person, like, in 1949, we see a man named L. Wilson Green, and he's the technical director of the Chemical and Radiological Laboratories. God, so many fucking big words. And he had heard of this Swedish scientist, Albert Hofmann, I think is how it's pronounced. He had discovered with and, like, lightly experimented with this thing that he named LSD-25, as it was the 25th chemical in a series of lysergic acid dithalamides that he had compounded. Yes, I am talking about fucking acid. LSD. This is the man who discovered LSD.
Wow.
So Green, who heard about the scientist, took all the information he could find on this drug and wrote a super long report called The Psychochemical Warfare, A New Concept of War. A quote from the report: throughout recorded history, wars have been characterized by death, human misery, and the destruction of property, each major conflict being more catastrophic than the one preceding it. I am convinced that it is possible by means of the techniques of psychochemical warfare to conquer an enemy without wholesale killing of his people and mass destruction of his property. Which is not a bad idea. I understand the motivation of being like, yeah, I'd like to prevent a World War II and the murdering of millions of people.
Yeah.
Don't think it justifies everything they end up doing.
Yeah.
So the Central Intelligence Director, Admiral Roscoe Hellencoder, caught word of this and asked, was like, hey, can the CIA do that? That sounds like an interesting project. and they turned to chemists at Camp Dietrich for help.
Of course they did.
President Truman was like, yeah, you guys can work together under a project called MK Naomi. Naomi was focused on, like, toxic chemicals, suicide pills, deadly shellfish toxin, like some real James Bond shit.
Mm.
But the idea of Camp Dietrich working with the CIA was pretty big. So that's what the MK Naomi kind of was, basically, was them working together.
Okay.
Oh, and the CIA testing it on prisoners overseas. Forgot that part.
Great.
They did a lot of more fucked up stuff that doesn't really have anything to do with MK Ultra as a whole. So if you want more details on that, I definitely recommend reading the book. I'm gonna say that a lot. Guys, read this fucking book. So while MK Naomi was really interesting, it wasn't doing what the director wanted, which was mind control. So in 1950, he took things one step further and he created something called Operation Bluebird, which, according to kind of legend, was named because the mission was to make people sing like a bird. And my note on that is, like, okay, but why not canary? I feel like canaries are more known to sing than bluebirds. Is that wrong? Am I wrong?
No, I don't think so.
Bluebird just seems, I don't know. I'm very upset by their choice in names. While Bluebird is first starting and expanding within the first 6 months, a new CIA director takes over. And this new CIA director brings on notorious asshole Alan Dulles. I hate this man, just for a lot of things, this included. Dulles was really passionate about the mind control experiments, and he decides to take an old transit camp that the Nazis used and turn it into something called Camp King. And Camp King was used for something called special interrogation. So Dulles was really passionate about the mind control experiments.
Can I ask a question really quick?
Oh, yeah.
Since you've said his name, Alan Dulles, why does that sound familiar to me? Have we talked about him in regards to Project Pegasus or anything?
JFK.
Oh, that's why. All right. Yep. Okay. Yeah. Okay.
Yes.
Got it. All right. Continue. I was like, why is this name familiar?
Mm-hmm. The JFK conspiracies. He was the CIA director that JFK fired.
Okay. Got ya. All right. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you for the clarification. Of course.
So he was really passionate about mind control experiments, and he turned to an old camp that was used by the Nazis in a small German town that had been taken over by the U.S. Army and named Camp King. Camp King was used for, quote, special interrogation. Group of counterintelligence agents within this group, known as the Rough Boys, were based there, and they had a reputation for abusing prisoners.
Oh, great. Because, like, I'm just like, I don't care who it is, but we shouldn't be abusing anyone. I don't care if they're prisoners, we should not be abusing anyone.
Yeah, that should not be, like, the verb that you're using to describe any treatment at all. Bluebird teams were sent to interrogate and experiment at Camp King. And then Dulles went a step further and built the CIA's own secret prison within Camp King.
And because of the fact that the CIA has, like, no fucking rules or oversight, they can just do this in another country willy-nilly?
Yeah.
What in the entire fuck?
Yeah. Basically. Oh, God. Okay. Here's another excerpt. With the coming of the Cold War in the late 1940s, a different sort of prisoner began arriving at Camp King. Many were from Eastern Europe, including East Germany. Some were captured Soviet agents. Others claimed to be refugees, but had just been judged unreliable. The guilty were mixed with the simply unfortunate. All were what the CIA called expendable, meaning that if they disappeared, no one would inquire too closely. The especially expendable, along with those believed to be guarding especially valuable secrets, were sent to Villa Schuster. In its basement, doctors and scientists conducted the most extreme experiments on human beings that had ever been carried out by officers of the United States government.
Everyone out here really wants to think that we're, like, so amazing, and I'm like, we literally do genocide and war crimes all the time. What? Oh my god.
So, remember Kurt Blom, who I talked about earlier? Mm-hmm. He comes to work at Camp King.
Great.
So they had secret prisons in West Germany, and then they opened another one in Japan. God. Excerpt from the book. Bluebird interrogation teams captured North Korean soldiers with drugs, including sodium amytal, a depressant that can have hypnotic effects, and with three potent stimulants. Ugh. Including a convulsant that can cause seizures and respiratory paralysis. While they were in their weakened state of transition between the effects of depressants and stimulants, CIA experimenters subjected them to hypnosis, electroshock, and debilitating heat. Their goal, according to one report, was to induce violent cathartic reactions, alternatively putting subjects to sleep, then waking them up until they were sufficiently confused to be coerced into reliving an experience from their past. Regardless of all of the torture that they had completed, they weren't getting the results that they wanted. So Dulles decided to search elsewhere.
Of course not. Question before we move on. Since you said that this is happening in Germany and Japan...
Yes.
Do the countries that they're doing this in, like, does anybody know that this is happening?
No.
I know it's the CIA and it's supposed to be secret.
No.
Jesus Christ. The fact that we were able to just go and function on another country's soil and do those things. Oh my God. Oh, yeah.
Dulles goes to search for just the right mad scientist who can take this project where it needs to go. And that's where Sidney Gottlieb comes in. Literally,
the fact that we're in reality talking about mad scientists, this is like a movie. They're like acting like life is a movie and they could just do whatever
completely.
The fuck they want.
Completely. This is insane. I know. Fun fact, Sidney Gottlieb starts working for the CIA on Friday the 13th in July in 1951. Just needed to throw that out there.
Of course.
After getting settled, one of the first things he did was expand and centralize Operation Bluebird, which then effectively changed it to Artichoke. Yes.
What are these names, dude? I'm like, who picks these operation names?
I mean, Gottlieb Artichoke. Picked that one. But, yeah, it's... Some people say that it's, like, to, like, peel back the layers of the brain like an artichoke.
Oh. God.
But I feel like that's just, I feel like that's adding meaning to something later. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, quote from the book, the first directive sent to Artichoke team suggested the project's extreme nature. One recommends that interrogations be carried out in a safe house or safe area with adjoining room for recording devices and a bathroom because occasionally the artichoke techniques produce nausea, vomiting, or other conditions which may make a bathroom facilities essential.
Of course they do. I mean, you're literally fucking with people's bodies. Of course that's happening.
Right? A CIA memo describes it as such. Specific research should be undertaken to develop new chemicals or drugs or to improve known elements for use in artichoke work. An exhaustive study should be made of various gases and aerosols. Gas guns, jets, or sprays, both concealed and open, should be studied. In addition, the problem of permanent brain injury and amnesia following the lack of oxygen or exposure to gases should also be studied. And at one point, they just, like, kind of add, the agency under no circumstances would consider lobotomy and brain surgery as an operative measure. However, it is felt that the subject should be examined. Like, really?
We don't necessarily feel that this is a necessity, but we're going to do it anyway.
We're not going to do it, but, like, we should.
We're going
to. We should.
We're going to tell you that we're not, but we're still going to do it.
We won't. I already did.
Oh,
I'm
God.
Not gonna do it. I did it. Okay, so 3 days after Artichoke started, Alan Dulles was... How would they know? They're not going to know. Dulles was promoted to the second top position at the CIA. Not, like, because of this necessarily, just, you know, like, it happened. Yeah. So now we have this dude who is an asshole and has all of this power and is, like, in the second top position of the CIA. Okay, back to prisons in Germany and Japan. The CIA is using various drugs and interrogation techniques to try and get the truth. One subject, who was referred in memos by the name of Kelly, was actually a Bulgarian politician named Dmitry Dimitrov. He had, like, shared information with the CIA, but his CIA handlers decided that he was considering shifting his loyalty to the French intelligence service. So... to prevent that, they arranged to have him kidnapped and thrown in Greek prison.
Mm-hmm. That's a whole politician. This is not... this is somebody who people will notice.
Yeah. So Kinzer writes, after torturing him for 6 months, his Greek interrogators concluded that he knew no secrets. They returned him to the CIA, which shipped him to Fort Clayton. In 1952, the CIA officer monitoring his case, wonder what that means, reported that, quote, because of his confinement in a Greek prison and military hospital, Kelly has become very hostile towards the United States and our intelligence operations in particular. I wonder
rightly
why.
Rightly so.
He recommended an artichoke approach to Kelly to see if it would be possible to reorient Kelly toward us. Kelly was held at Fort Clayton for 3 years.
Stop!
And no known documents... oh, so sorry. No known documents trace the course of his treatment.
Okay.
So, years later...
what country was he from again?
Bulgaria.
Bulgaria? And they, like... were there no red flags in Bulgaria about why a politician was missing?
Well, years later, the United States, he tried to interest, like, a magazine about his story, but the CIA told editors that he was an imposter who was disreputable, unreliable, and filled with, like, lies. Like, they discredited him. They gaslit
Bro.
Him. Like, no, he's crazy.
Oh, my
yeah.
God.
Uh-huh. So they experimented with a bunch of drugs. The OSS, CIA's dad, had already made a really potent THC liquid that had no taste or smell, and they were, like, so sure it was going to be a truth drug. Didn't work, actually. It proved to be too unreliable. So then the CIA does tests on mental patients, where they give them various forms of cocaine, including, like, injecting them with it. those were also, that was also found unreliable, and they're like, okay, so those didn't work. So we're going to try heroin, which they were really interested in for two reasons. Both the impact of how high it made a person, but then also the stress, the withdrawals of not having heroin produced as well.
Oh my God.
Yeah, they were like, that's cool. But that didn't work. It wasn't like, none of these drugs were like reliably getting people to like tell them the truth or, you know, control their brains.
Mm-hmm.
So when that didn't work, this is my direct note, they asked their Nazi pals about mescaline, knowing that the Nazis had tested mescaline on humans in concentration camps. Mm-hmm. The Nazis didn't get a ton of results, but they felt it had, quote, untapped potentials.
Oh, of course. Didn't actually get anything, but, you know, let's just keep doing this and see what happens. Maybe
we think it could do something. it didn't do what we wanted it to, but we think it could. So Kinzer goes on to describe an incident where they gave someone mescaline without telling him. Gottlieb, this is a quote, Gottlieb had already brought several doctors into his orbit and was pushing them to carry out tests on psychoactive drugs. One of them, Paul Hotch of New York Psychiatric Institute, agreed to inject mescaline into one of his patients so its effects could be observed. He chose 42-year-old professional tennis player Harold Blauer, who had come to him seeking treatment for depression following a divorce.
Are you fucking kidding? And now he's about to fuck this person up.
He was injected with mescaline 7 times in a month, the last dose being more than the other and proved fatal. Dude, he fucking died.
Bro, what the fuck?
No, he had no idea. He had no idea. And at one point he was like, hey, I don't like this. I would like to stop.
And he was like, I don't feel okay.
We're so close to done. He fucking died, dude.
Yeah. That's absolutely insane.
Okay.
Wait. So did he know what they were injecting into him? Or
No.
He thought it was something else. And he was like, I don't like what this is.
Yeah, he was like, I'm hallucinating. This is not helping me. I just got divorced and I'm depressed. And his doctor shot him up with mescaline.
And you're like, great, now I'm seeing things. Like, please stop whatever you're doing. Okay, let's give you one more dose that's like way more. And then fucking
and they gave him a bunch. You. The book describes it. Oh my God, it's so intense. After a while, most of these drugs prove to be unreliable and have various reactions in people. A lot of the scientists were, like, more comfortable testing drugs that they already knew of. LSD was not one of those drugs. So it kind of brings Gottlieb back to LSD.
Okay.
Spies had shown that Russia had noted the creation of LSD in one of their reports, which Gottlieb kind of, like, took as evidence that they knew of it and were probably using it. I get that. Yeah. I want to reiterate that there has never been any single evidence, reports, or proof that had shown that Soviet Russia perfected or was even trying to use mind control.
He just said, I'm going to make a massive fucking assumption here and then fuck with people's lives.
Basically. Okay. So Alan Dulles gets a promotion and becomes leader of the CIA.
Great.
Gottlieb is like doing his CIA stuff, but also has like another role in the CIA. And his official title is actually Poisoner in Chief because he's basically
they did the
like,
thing. They
yeah, well, he's basically the person that's like, yeah, exactly. If the government or the U.S. or anyone needs information on poison or needs poison or like someone gets poisoned and they're like, help us, they go to him.
Okay.
That's sort of like how he's like looked at in history. Just wanted to throw in where the name of the book comes from. My next quote. So Gottlieb is really impressed with all the torturing he and his crew has done, but he still hasn't cracked that like mind control thing that he's really looking for. So he wants to take everything that he's doing to the next level. So he goes to the chief of operations for the CIA's Directorate of Plans. God, words are fucking hard. His name is Richard Helms. He's an important player in all of this. They write a proposal for something new. Quote from Kinzer. He recommends that this project be expanded to include experiments of such an ultra-sensitive nature that they cannot and should not be handled by means of contracts which would associate the CIA or the government with the work in question. These experiments lie entirely within two well-defined fields of endeavor. A. To develop a capability in the covert use of biological and chemical materials. These area includes the production of various psychological conditions, which could support present or future clandestine operations. Aside from the offensive potential, the development of a comprehensive capability in this field of covert chemical and biological warfare gives us a thorough knowledge of the enemies, therefore potential, thus enabling us to defend ourselves against a foe who might not be restrained in the use of these techniques. This material could potentially aid in discrediting individuals, eliciting information, implanting suggestion, and other forms of mental control. And then the second thing is just fully redacted in the files. Like, we don't know what the second thing was.
I feel throughout this whole thing, there's so much assuming going on. I'm making the assumption that these other countries are doing this thing, so I'm going to do the same thing so that I can stop them and what they're doing. I don't know if they're actually doing it, but we're going to run it with it as if they are.
For a lot, throughout a lot of this book, I'm like partially positive that they weren't sure, that they don't think that anyone else was doing this, that they just said that because they got caught.
Yeah.
Or like trying to persuade people. I think that after all of these other countries were testing shit on humans, they were like, okay, we're going to too. And we're going to do what you guys haven't done. Fucking mind control. Because you guys may have all of these people, but now we're going to take them. I don't think that they actually thought that other countries were doing this. I think they wanted to get ahead.
Yeah.
And
they just used it as a cover up.
And they just used it as an excuse because they got caught. Gottlieb is given $300,000 as a starting budget and, quote, permission to launch and conduct experiments at will without the signing or writing of other contracts that would be required for experiments. And that is the official birth of MKUltra.
Wow. Holy shit, Katie.
Wow. Yeah.
Wow. Is that our pausing point for episode one? For part one?
That is our pausing point for part one.
All right, bro. I can't even imagine what you're going to bring to us for the next episode after hearing all of that.
Oh, yeah. We go into some of the key players that we know. I mean, I'll give a summary next week, obviously. And then, you know, for people who listen to podcasts like I do, they'll probably just like wait and like binge all three. I kind of expect to see some lower numbers, kind of like waiting for those other parts to come out.
Yeah.
I'm going to fucking do my best to get the notes for 2 and 3 done so that we can record them at once and drop them, if not at once, relatively soon.
Yeah, within a few days of each other.
Like, part 3 won't be its own week's episode. That'll just kind of be like, here you go, breaking it up for the sake of editing and you guys as listeners.
Here's a little bonus.
Yeah, but it's a lot. And when I think about MKUltra, I think about, you know, what we're going to talk about in part 2. But holy shit, there's so much more to it that I just feel like really needed a highlight. This needs to be talked about more. This needs to be taught in schools.
Yeah. And we definitely need... Oh, I'm so sorry if people hear Chalupa in the background. My husband just went outside and now he's going apeshit. I definitely believe that we needed to know all of this beforehand. You need to know who the players are. You need to know the motivation behind this. Mm.
Well, I didn't want to just be like, oh yeah, Camp Dietrich is making the LSD. Like, we needed to know who those people are, who it's filled with. Why are these people so cool with what we're about to talk about in the next episode? Why are we doing any of this? How, you know, there was just so much information that had to be talked about. And there are a few times where some of the people that we know now to be have been involved with MKUltra did give a description of some of the tests that they were put through. And minor spoiler alert, some of those people referred to those tests and the people running them as like modern day Dr. Mengele's, who was a Nazi scientist.
Mm-hmm.
And the tests that were being run on him were like lineal products of the fucking Nazi scientists. Like literal fucking Nazis. Yeah. So it's dark. It's gonna get darker. I'll let you know that now. It's gonna get darker.
I mean, at least we gave some trigger warnings.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, wow. Oh my God. I didn't even like... There was like one little thing that I'll just mention right now before we go. The book like goes into this one instance where Gottlieb like had to kind of like prove himself to Dulles before like getting hired for this thing. And
I know this is about to be some toxic shit.
Oh, it's so fucking bad. Dulles like met with this CIA operative, and in that meeting basically like told this operative, hey, we know that you were double crossing us, first with the Nazis and then again with the Soviets. You were spying on us for them because they were blackmailing you because you're a fucking pedophile.
Whoa!
The next day, that man is found dead with a small vial of untraceable like in it. And it is believed that Gottlieb provided a poison for Dulles to end this man's life as a way of like proving himself and his loyalty to Dulles.
Yeah, because now he's got him for murder, so.
Oh, not that the fucking CIA gives a shit, but it's more of like a, will you do this favor for me? How loyal are you to me? You know, like.
No, that's what I mean. Like, now they can hold that over him. Yeah. As, like, a means of, like, really testing that loyalty. Like, you try to leave us, we can tell people that you fucking murdered someone.
It's not even like we're gonna hold this over you. It's, how far are you willing to go? Mm. What are your limits?
Yeah.
And Gottlieb was like, I don't fucking have any, bitch!
Oh, God.
Yeah. Yeah, dude, it's nuts. It's fucking nuts. So yeah, we're gonna get into some wild stuff this week. Ashley, I'm so sorry you have to edit this, so you have to listen to this all over again.
Oh, God.
Please rate and review us. Go watch some Bob's Burgers or something as like a palate cleanser.
Yeah. Go do something lighthearted.
Truly.
All right. Well, thank you, Katie. Until next week. Bye.
90 noodles.
For any photos related to today's episode, please go to our Instagram.
You can follow us on Instagram and TikTok at AL2KPodcast.
Like us on Facebook at Always the Last to Know Podcast.
If you have any questions, please email us at AL2KPodcast@gmail.com.
Please share, rate, and review us on your podcast listening app of choice.
Join our Patreon. You can find us at patreon.com/AL2KPodcast or click the link in our bio on social media.
Thank you for listening.